Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. He joins us Monday in this hour, every Monday. We appreciate same. Guy, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much. Good to be with you.
Guy, there are so many moving parts to what's going on. Let's first start with the Federal Reserve action taken this past Wednesday, I believe it was. They cut rates 25 basis points. So what's up next?
Well, it's an interesting time, and we're not getting any clarity from the Fed. So we all knew that the 25 basis point cut was baked in. Chairman Powell has said December, who knows? The odds are still 3-1 that there'll be another 25% cut. But we had a big difference in the voting members. For the first time, we had two dissents, but one on each side. Stephen Miron said he wanted to cut 50 basis points. Jeffrey Schmidt said he was opposed to any sort of cut, shouldn't have had any at all. And the Federal Reserve is an interesting institution. There are 11 people on the Open Market Committee, but they're alternates. So the alternates are sort of like the runner-up in the beauty pageant. If for any reason Miss America can't serve, you step in. Well, two of the alternates, Lori Logan and Beth Hammack, both said they would prefer to pause. So they're not voting members, but they could be if something happens to any of the Fed open market members. So that was an intriguing difference. So you have one voting member opposed, two alternates saying, you know, we ought to just stop. And then one voting member saying, we need to go faster. So that's not giving us much clarity. Inflation still 3% core and CPI. The Fed did say they're going to stop shrinking their balance sheet as of December 1st. Said, okay, we're going to keep buying new securities. We're not going to let the securities run off because we don't want to create a lack of liquidity. And I think, if anything, what the Fed's telling us is they have no idea what's coming next. And so they're sort of in a wait-and-see mode. Data-dependent is the favorite phrase. But for the first time, you have significant dissent on both sides.
So what's pushing this lack of clarity more than anything else? I mean, are they giving us any indication?
The people that want to pause are saying, look, folks, inflation's still high. Our target is 2, and we're not getting there. We're stuck at 3. We feel, the people that want to pause, feel that tariff impacts will still cause inflation to be higher. They feel that the challenge of price increases is more severe than the risk of unemployment. Now, on the other side, Steve Miron says, look, we're seeing layoffs at companies like Microsoft, Target, Paramount. you know, we need to support the labor market. And the Fed has a dual mandate, low inflation and low unemployment. Sometimes you can't do both. And so the challenge right now is they really are struggling to see how they do both. And the other big problem that if you could get any Fed member outside of Washington to speak off the record, they would tell you, we don't have enough consensus politically to balance our budget. You know, the United States can't keep running big deficits forever. There will be a problem. And traditionally, the only way to end deficits is massive inflation, cutting spending, or significantly raising taxes. Well, it's very hard to raise taxes or cut spending in Washington. Neither side wants to do that. And so inflation is sort of a passive way to let rates is sort of solve a deficit problem. So the people that are saying pause are very afraid that Congress, by inaction, will let inflation build up because they just won't deal with the deficit problem. And that's why we're beginning to see more people at the Fed say, you know, we can't afford to keep doing this. We have to stop. And unfortunately, the Fed doesn't control the deficit. They have essentially nothing to do with the deficit. That's up to Congress.
So when we, as Steve Marin is pointing out about these layoffs, and I mean, they've been pretty significant numbers. What's the thought process behind this? I mean, how much more do they think is out there to happen? You know, obviously we're into Q4. I would suspect a lot of this might happen in Q1. What does your intuition tell you? I mean, are we going to continue to see these multiple thousands of layoffs in these major corporations?
One of the things that's pushing that, people are saying that artificial intelligence is cutting the need for entry-level workers. So I think there will be some of that. Ultimately, any new technology ultimately leads to additional productivity and economic growth. So that's something that is up in the air. The challenge is we used to have two open jobs for every unemployed worker. Now it's one-to-one. So it's tougher, and you hear anecdotally people having a hard time getting jobs. And just one small correction. I talked about two alternates for the Fed. There are actually five alternates. I only talked about the two that had made comments. The others didn't make specific comments. But looking into next year, it's really a foggy crystal ball. The Fed doesn't know what's up. Companies are under pressure to keep costs down. You know, Starbucks reduced headcount in order to become more efficient. So I think we will still see layoffs. I don't think that they'll be massive, and I'm fairly optimistic that next year will be a better employment year. But it's very hard to tell from this point.
Yeah, because obviously under the dual mandate, you know, when you talk about the data, sometimes by the time you react, it's too late, though, right?
I mean, yeah, and that's one of the big problems. The Fed is always looking in the rearview mirror. It's hard to do forward projections. The Fed does survey business leaders, and you know, I'm fortunate to be on one of those panels where they survey people about what's going on, but even business leaders don't know. I mean, we all are doing our best to project the future, but we're in an odd time. The stock market is priced to perfection. It really is sort of bubble-like. The AI thing, it now is beginning to look a little frothy, particularly when people are borrowing big money to invest in AI. You know, it's one thing when Microsoft was investing their cash pile to invest in AI, but when companies borrow billions, then you have a potential problem. The fear and the worst nightmare for the Fed is when you end up with stagflation, where you have high unemployment and high inflation. And that was what Ronald Reagan coined as the misery index, where you add those two together. And they all want to avoid that. There's nobody on the Fed, you know, left, right, or center that wants it to get into a stagflation situation. But they're really perplexed as how to how to avoid it. Stephen Miron feels, and he said in interviews, look, if we'll cut rates fast enough, we'll stimulate enough growth that the economy will come back, more job openings will be created, more tax revenue will be created, and we'll move towards solving it. The people on the other side say, we're just not certain about that. We feel like inflation is sticky, and until we do something to reduce demand, inflation's going to stay high. Now, reducing demand is unpleasant because that means all of us have less money to spend.
So when you look at, like, what Stephen Miron kind of makes a little bit of sense to me, I was reading an article in the New York Post the other day talking about the number of deals for home sales that are falling. They're falling out, right? And they said about 15% of home purchase agreements were canceled once people got put in the offer and they started figuring out what their actual costs were going to be in the purchase of the home and the upkeep and maintenance of the home. They were like, we can't do this. You know, and a lot of times it's the two I's, interest and insurance. And so the only thing that they can address is the interest. And until that gets lower, I think you're going to see this stagnating real estate market out there that's revealing itself every month with new data out there that's just not really good, right?
Yeah, well, one of the problems, too, is the Fed can really influence short-term rates, but long-term rates are subject to the market demand. So they can push down the Fed funds rate. They can push down the prime rate. The mortgage rate is priced off the 10-year Treasury, and it's come down a bit. I mean, it was, you know, the highs were above 7.5. It's now 6.19 is the average interest rate. But absent a big recession, it's unlikely that rates will get much lower than high fives. And that's going to be a challenge. The insurance part is not coming down because repairs, replacement cost have all gone up, and that's super sticky. The price of repairs is not going to come down until we have, you know, some innovations in construction or an expanded workforce.
So typically we would see a relaxation in the underwriting criteria of these loans, and that has kind of fallen out of favor because of all the bank failures and, you know, the history. We all know what that is. So how do we turn this around? Because this was always the quickest fix for the economy, was it not?
Oh, yeah. Mortgages, there's no time in your life that you'll spend more than when you buy a house because you need new furniture, you need new drapes, you need lawn care stuff. You need to pay moving expenses. So the way to turn it around is for Congress actually to get together and have a credible path toward a balanced budget where long-term rates can start to trend downwards, because we're still the most vibrant economy in the world. If we were an economy that people said, look, they've got their act together, they're going to get things balanced, you know, over the next, even if it's the next decade, long-term rates would start to fall, and then mortgage rates would fall as well. So it's a tough ask, but it's something that's important, and I don't think it's unreasonable for voters to tell the elected officials, look, folks, y'all have to quit fighting each other and come up with a plan that actually works. I mean, this was done once before in our lifetime when Bill Clinton was president, and you know, none of us looking back felt like we had too little government when Clinton was there, and nobody felt like, you know, we were deprived. So it is doable. It just requires some effort on both sides.
So not to make this conversation circular, but let's go back to one of the things that the Board of Governors is concerned with, congressional inaction. Is there anything new about that? I mean, you know, we're seeing congressional inaction at its best, right, in trying to remedy health care costs in this country. And there are some achievable things that they could do, but they're not doing them.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest problems, and this extends to both parties, is we fall in love with our policies and we forget our priority. So, perfect example, the Affordable Care Act, sometimes called Obamacare. The intention was wonderful. Everybody wants healthcare inflation to go down. So we passed the Affordable Care Act. It didn't work. Healthcare inflation continued to go up. So a rational Congress would say, okay, it didn't work. What do we need to do? Let's look around the world at other developed economies that are doing things successfully, and let's make a course correction to get back to something that is affordable, because that was the objective. The objective, the priority was wonderful. The policy didn't work. So let's get back to what we intended to achieve, and let's talk about why it didn't get where we wanted, and then let's make it happen. And I think it's entirely doable. You know, we do have examples of other countries that spend less as a share of GDP on healthcare and have very good health outcomes. So, you know, if I were running things, Team D, Team R, get together, look around the world. Okay, what's being done really well? And then let's emulate that, and then let's work together to reduce healthcare costs, because that's in everybody's benefit.
Yeah, I did my monologue on that this morning. I couldn't agree with you more. So as the federal deficit now is north of what, $38 trillion? Is that right?
Well, that's the amount owed. The deficit annually is about $2 trillion.
But the amount owed about north of $38 trillion, we keep talking about at some point there's a breaking point. Do we have any idea what that number is?
We don't, and the problem is we look back and we look and say, well, debt as a percent of GDP is about where it was at the end of World War II, and we lived with that. But what we forget is these times are not remotely comparable. At the end of World War II, there was literally no one else. The United States was the dominant global power, period. Nobody was close. And the rest of the world, the rest of the developed world, had been destroyed by war. So we had dominant position. Rebuilding had to occur both in Europe and in Asia. And finally, you had a giant workforce coming back, because once the soldiers were demilitarized, they came back into the workforce. So we had an increasing workforce, giant demand, and there was nobody else but us. So we could set the rules and make things work. This time around, we have a shrinking workforce. We have China trying to be a dominant force to oppose the U.S. And we are in a challenge because we just don't have the need for massive rebuilding that we did at the end of World War II. So the break will come, unfortunately, suddenly. You know, it's not a linear thing. There'll come a day, and then suddenly inflation will be very high, and people will realize we really do have to do something, and the crisis is upon us. And I don't know when that's going to occur, but I'd certainly rather work now to avoid it becoming a true crisis.
You know, it's amazing to me. We can make these predictions, projections about the climate crisis, and, you know, we have a certain percentage of the public that'll buy all of that, but something as critical as this is the funding and financing of our government, the ability to have these social programs, the sustenance for so many folks, the number is growing, and we can't figure out where that number is, you know. And in the meantime, we just keep borrowing.
Well, and we keep hoping it'll happen if you're an elected official when somebody else's term is up, not yours.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're getting good at bet. We're getting better at kicking the can down the road. But at some point, I wish there would we would have more heads on that issue, and brilliant minds trying to figure out, okay, where is the breaking point as it relates to this country as to what we're going to do before we start doing things like what we're doing now, make the subsidies permanent. I mean, they had total control of that, right, when they made them temporary. And they did so, I guess, for good, sound fiscal reasons. And now, all of a sudden, things have changed. I don't know what has changed, because we're in more debt than we've ever been in. But, you know, it takes somebody with a greater mind than mine to figure it out for sure. All right, we got to get to a break. We're visiting with Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We'll be right back. We'll talk about the China tariff settlement and what's in that deal when we return.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk. Crazy weather we're having. No, it's not. It's just weather. It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer. First 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Guy, the China tariff settlement, the president was looking to accomplish a number of things. I'm not so sure that he accomplished all that he wanted, but what did get accomplished?
Yeah, it actually fairly impressive. You know, China tariffs have been on again, off again. We've had proposals of an extra 10%, an extra 60%, an extra 110%. Finally, he met with President Xi, and what they agreed to is China's going to suspend the export controls on rare earth minerals that they had announced October 9th. They're also going to issue licenses to export those rare earth minerals. They're going to take what they call significant measures to curb the flow of fentanyl to America. They're going to suspend their tariffs on farm products like soybeans, pork, corn, and dairy, remove non-tariff measures targeting U.S. industries, purchase 12 million tons of soybeans by year end, and annually about 25 million tons, resume imports of sorghum and hardwood logs, also resume exports of the Nexperia chips. That's a Dutch chip maker that got in trouble with the Chinese government. They're also going to quit the investigations that they had into Qualcomm for violations of Chinese law. And they're going to stop the investigation of shipbuilding conflicts with South Korea. So pretty good news. The end result is the effective tariff on Chinese goods as of yesterday is still 47.6%, but avoided the 1060 or 110, take your pick, which one of the projected increases was going to go into effect. I think the important thing is we're talking to China again. Apparently no progress in getting them to stop buying Russian oil, which would have been a nice bonus, because that's the reason that war is continuing, is because China keeps buying oil from Russia. But some good news, and the fact that we're communicating and working, I think, is a good thing. You know, there are big arguments on both sides as to which country can sustain a trade war better, whether it's the U.S. or China. And I'm not sure which one can, but I know it's not in either one of our interests to have an extended trade war. It'd be a lot better if we could agree on, you know, rational rules of the road that both sides follow, and particularly on the Chinese side, actually obeying international law and following the treaties that they've signed.
So when we say that we've reduced the overall rate on Chinese goods, I think they said what, to about 47%.
Right.
It was going to be at 100, right? Effective, I guess, yesterday or the day before. What's today? The third. Yeah, the day before.
The challenge is you had three different proposed rates, a 10, a 60, and a 110, depending on which segment and which. But, yeah, it was going to go up substantially. The lowest was 10. The highest was 110. So that is off the table for now. And, you know, we're back to an effective rate. It's hard to really know. The information yesterday said that the effective rate on China tariffs is now 47.6%. That's pretty impressively precise. I wouldn't be that optimistic that I get it exactly right, but I think it's somewhere in the 40s at this moment.
Yeah. So for all things considered, positive then, if nothing more, just to have the communication going.
Yeah, and the other thing that I didn't mention is we've resumed a sort of a military hotline where our military can talk to theirs, and that's really important because you don't want to accidentally get into something where, you know, somebody, you know, a ship is off track or a plane's off track, and you say, well, are y'all attacking or did you just make a mistake? And if you have the ability to talk, you can avoid some conflicts. And also, I think it's better for us to develop relationships where we discuss things and say, look, folks, these are the real red lines. You can't invade Taiwan. You can't take over all these different islands that are involved with Indonesia and the Philippines. And we do want you to obey the rules of the road in trade.
I mean, was there any movement at all as to the level of their aggression in the South China Sea when you talk about these islands and everything?
Unfortunately not. That is a long-term plan that China has to, take over the South China Sea and make it an area they dominate. There's some interesting counter moves. Some of the other countries, like South Vietnam, really are resisting that because they don't want to see China continue to press them. Because that's their immediate neighbor. They're very aggressive and, you know, fairly abusive. I mean, their environmental practices when they build plants in foreign countries are really weak. Their respect for local customs is almost non-existent. So they're getting some pushback from the Philippines, from Indonesia, from South Vietnam, and saying, we really don't want to do this. It's an opportunity for us to make better alliances. And I think that would be something I'd certainly encourage the Secretary of State to do, is strengthen our alliances in Southeast Asia.
Yeah. All right, let's pivot to the shutdown. We're fast approaching to maybe break the record of one of the longest. The courts made some rulings today relative to SNAP benefits. It looks like the Trump administration has agreed to tap the contingency fund as a result of those rulings to an amount of 50% of the benefit for the month of November. And then the president said, that's it. That's all there's going to be.
Well, the contingency funds will run out if you paid full benefits in slightly less than a month. So that's really all there is. So they are going to make some payments, and that's a good thing. But at this moment, we don't have an off-ramp. And, you know, I don't want to get too political, but there is a Senate bill. I'd encourage people, if you talk to your senators, to support it. Senate Bill number 3 by Brian Schultz and Mitt Romney. You've got a Democrat and a Republican. And what it says is, let's never do this again. If we can't agree, there'll be an automatic 2-week CR until things are sorted out. So there'll be no more government shutdowns. And It's just something that we don't want to go into. And it's intriguing because most politicians have been opposed to shutdowns. I mean, Chuck Schumer said last year, avoiding a shutdown is very good news for our country, our voters, children, and small business. And another comment, a shutdown would mean chaos and pain, needless heartache for the American people. So that was before. This past week, he said, every day is getting better for us, which a little different turn of phrase. Hakeem Jeffries, it's about American families will be hurt. Travel will be hurt for the family. Businesses will be impacted. Therefore, we shouldn't have a shutdown. This was 2 years ago. And then President Obama, I refuse to let the American people be held hostage to the demands of a few. And then, you know, George Bush, Americans expect us to work together. They expect us to govern responsibly. A government shutdown is not in their interest. And George Bush, again, it's time for both parties to stop finger pointing and start working together for the good of the country. A government shutdown would hurt the economy and hurt working families. So, you know, Team D and Team R are both opposed to shutdowns, except right now we're having a hard time finding an off-ramp. And I think maybe with the elections tomorrow, at that point, it may be time to say, okay, you know, this didn't work. Let's do a CR, maybe even a CR through the end of the year, and get back to negotiating. But there's been no progress. This will for sure be the longest shutdown that we've had. You know, the previous one was 35 days. This one will for sure exceed that because there are not votes in time to avoid it. And, you know, historically, this really has not. We talk about historic shutdowns, but under Reagan, we had 8 different shutdowns, but the longest was 3 days. So really nothing special. Under George Bush, there was 1, and it was 3 days. Clinton had 2. 1 was 5 days, 1 21 days. Barack Obama, 1 for 16 days. You know, this is pretty unprecedented. You know, it will be the longest one ever. And I'm sincerely hoping that that after the elections tomorrow, that the parties can just do the clean CR. The federal government workers union has called for that. The airlines have called for it. And certainly the American people are getting to the point that, look, it's time. Let's just go back. Once again, President Obama said time to end the charade.
This is what I don't understand, is the Democrats are doubling down on the Affordable Care Act stuff, right? And, you know, both Kaiser, CMS, and Cato and others agree that about 60% of the enrollees will continue to have their low-cost plan, whether these subsidies are made permanent or not. Less than about 3.5% of the increase in the premiums has anything to do with the subsidies becoming permanent. I get all of that. But they're willing to shut the government down for a small sector of the population while everyone else that has commercial insurance, whether through an employer-sponsored plan or some other organizational plan or whatever, is experiencing the same medical inflation that these folks are. And they've removed the income restriction because in some markets you can make up to $600,000. How do they square that up? I don't understand.
Well, in Washington, it's not about being logical. It's about what you think will work. And remember, Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries are under extreme pressure from the left wing of their party. Now, I think the elections tomorrow will take some of that pressure off because it's pretty certain Mondami is going to win in New York. And the early projections are New Jersey and Virginia will both go Democratic. So at that point, you can step off of the shutdown and say, all right, time to get back to working for the American people. The logic of the Affordable Care Act was to reduce insurance inflation. It didn't work. And what we need to do is get both parties together and say, okay, why didn't it work? You know, one of the unfortunate things about the Affordable Care Act is it led to massive consolidation. You have much more concentrated power in a very few hospital networks.
Oh, absolutely.
A lot of power in pharmacy benefit companies and independent pharmacies going out of business. That wasn't what anybody intended, but it's what occurred. So now we need to say, what do we need to reverse that and to reduce healthcare inflation? Because we're in a terrible situation right now, and we didn't get the outcome we wanted. So what do we need to change to get the outcome we want?
You have some states that have insurance companies with over 90% market share. You know, I mean, there's like no competition, right? It's Affordable Care Act or one conventional insurer, you know, medical insurer. It's absolutely crazy. All right, we're visiting with Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contract. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Guy, let's pivot to more local issues. City of New Orleans cash flow continues to be a problem. They continue to search for solutions.
Yeah, we're in a deep hole right now. And, you know, my sympathies are with our incoming mayor because there are a lot of things that need to be done and a lot less money that is available. So the situation is this. For the last 3 years, have spent more than we've taken in. And you ask, how is that possible? Where the requirement under the charter is that there be a balanced budget, but it's not balanced spending. So when you prepare your budget, you estimate revenues too high, you estimate expenses too low, and you have, voila, a balanced budget. So The budgets were all balanced, but the cash flow wasn't. The administration didn't present monthly expense cash receipt numbers to the council, so they were operating blind. And now we're stuck. The state doesn't want to lend money to the city without taking it over. The city, rightfully so, doesn't want to be taken over by the state. Now, there may be a compromise, and the compromise would be this. Approve some limited borrowing. And in exchange, let the state do the sales tax collection, because compared to Jefferson, which does 300 sales tax audits a year, Orleans only does 26. So most people in that field think there's significant revenue that could be obtained if somebody else did the sales tax audits in the city of New Orleans. So potentially that could be a compromise that would it both work for the city and the state, because both would get more money if the city were more effective in collecting sales tax.
Yeah, you and I rarely disagree. You know, the state doesn't conduct a lot of audits either. And I think there's a lot of value in a local tax collector collecting their taxes, gaining a better understanding of the business operations that are here locally. You know, the state has always wanted to get into that deal. As, you know, the tax collector, I opposed it. I knew my taxpayers better than anybody did, for good reason, right? And, you know, I thought we did a much better job than the state did in collection. It's not rocket science. I mean, you know, you just got to make this a priority. They never have. They never will. I mean, these issues have been looming for decades. You have an assessor in the city of New Orleans, for example, as it relates to property taxes. Better than 90% of the appeals to the Louisiana Tax Commission come from the city of New Orleans. Why is that? You know, I mean, these are questions that need to be answered. And when you have that many folks that are contesting their tax bills, they tend to what? Not pay.
You know? Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, and you're, here you are trying to finance a government. I mean, that would be a quick fix because there is a lot of overlap between local and state collections. I would agree with you there. But there are a lot of things that... you know, that they don't do that we did at a local level. And I thought that having and understanding the business cycles was very, you know, important to the operations of local government. Just one person's opinion. That's all.
And you were doing an effective job. The challenge is in New Orleans, we're not doing the same effective job that you were doing in Jefferson. So the question is, how do we make Orleans as efficient as Jefferson was?
Our mindset, for example, during the pandemic, you had retailers calling in asking for guidance, and they said, "Well, you know, we're all working from home. We don't have access to our computers. Don't worry about sending your sales tax reports in." I've heard that repeatedly over and over and over. It's like, what are you kidding me? You know, so they thought the federal government was going to come in and bail them out forever. You know, that it wasn't going to be a big deal. If somebody collected money from someone that they weren't entitled to because they're acting as the fiduciary for the city, we had businesses that were, you know, keeping the money. It's like, you can't do that. I mean, it can't be allowed. But I've heard a lot of strange things, and they got to figure out how to improve that, and they got to figure out, you know, a more reliable property tax base and evaluation of property in the city of New Orleans. Because as you've said many, many times, businesses like consistency, right? And when you have inconsistency, they're not coming. And that's part of the challenge that we have right now. They're not coming. In fact, they're leaving. And they're leaving because they can't figure out who's on first right now. And that's a major, major problem. As always, we appreciate your time, your insight. Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We will be right back, folks. Stay
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life.
Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.